Warning, this show may contain adult language that is not suitable for all audiences.
This is the TSN MMA Show with Aaron Bronstetter.
Welcome to another edition of the TSN MMA Show. I'm your host, Aaron Bronstetter, and we have so much to recap in the world of MMA. UFC Fight Night, Vera versus Cruz, Bellator 284, PFL 8, Shane Burgos. Moving over to the PFL, we've got a matchup scheduled now between Robbie Lawler and Santiago Ponzinibbio. We have more MMA than you can shake a stick at. Plus, we've got a pay-per-view this week, UFC in Salt Lake City. UFC 278, headlined by Kamaru Usman, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport, taking on Leon Edwards, Rocky, rematch. And every single time that Kamaru Usman has had a rematch in the UFC, he has won. In fact, every time Kamaru Usman has fought in the UFC, he's won. So thus, every time he's had a rematch, he's won. Just by process of elimination. Simple as that. But before we get started, I want to talk about this week's monologue, which is about one Rory McDonald. The water boy, Eris, the Red King, a man of many nicknames, representing the Great White North in mixed martial arts for more than half of his life. A pretty incredible accomplishment, but he has decided to call it a career after a loss this past weekend to Delano Taylor in the main event of PFL 8, which took place over in Cardiff, Wales, at the Cardiff Motor Point Arena. The legendary arena where magic happens all the time in Cardiff. But Rory McDonald has decided to call it a day, retire from the sport, and that is the subject of this week's monologue. On Saturday night, after spending more than half of his life as a professional mixed martial artist, Rory McDonald decided to hang up the gloves for a final time and retire from mixed martial arts. In my opinion, Rory's retirement signals the end of the golden era of Canadian mixed martial arts. From around 2006 to 2015, the Canadian mixed martial arts fan base was rabid in concert with the incredible championship run of Georges St. Pierre and the success of Canadian fighters like Rory, Sam Stout, Mark Hominick, David Loiseau, and Patrick Cote, among others. After considerable lobbying, mixed martial arts was legalized in 2010, which opened the door for UFC 129 in 2011, which still holds the all-time North American mixed martial arts attendance record, with over 55,000 fans packing the Rogers Centre for a card that included St. Pierre, Rory, Hominick, and seven other Canadians. Like Islam Makhachev is to Khabib, Rory was considered the heir apparent to St. Pierre, the young, up-and-coming protege who would get his chance to shine when St. Pierre took a hiatus from MMA in 2013. Rory would come close to winning the title, up 3-1 against Robbie Lawler at UFC 189 before falling in the 5th round in one of the most violent bouts in MMA history. 2.5 years later, Rory would become a champion outside of the UFC, bringing home the welterweight championship in Bellator with a win over Douglas Lima. However, with Rory's retirement, we await the next crop of future Canadian champions. While there are up-and-coming fighters like Charles Jourdain and Hakeem Dawodu doing their thing in the UFC, and Arjun Singh Buller holding the heavyweight title in one championship, Canada is hungry for another crop of title challengers to emerge. And with the pandemic bringing the regional scene to a screeching halt for nearly 2 years, it has slowed the progress of up-and-coming fighters considerably. So happy trails to the Red King for brilliantly representing Canada during the bygone era of Canadian mixed martial arts. And we await the next crop of title challengers to emerge from Canada and represent the Great White North. I'm Aaron Bronstetter, and this is The Monologue. So there it is, Rory McDonald on the TSN MMA Show. Monologue. A discussion about Rory McDonald, I should say. As he walks away from the sport. And I believe that that signals the end of the, really, the golden era of mixed martial arts in Canada. It's been a great run for Canadian mixed martial arts, and now we await the next great group of talent that will challenge for UFC championships. We'll wait patiently, because it seems like it's going to be a little bit of time before we get that challenger. We have a lot of really strong fighters right now representing Canada, but it's hard to pinpoint one that really has that GSP factor. That Rory McDonald factor, even. I mean, a lot of people thought Rory McDonald was one day going to be a UFC welterweight champion. Ended up becoming a Bellator welterweight champion. Tried to win a milli in the PFL, but fell short in the last two seasons. So we move on and discuss What else is going on in the world of mixed martial arts? But happy trails to Rory McDonald. Really enjoyed watching his career and speaking with him. In fact, later on in the show, I'm going to bring you an interview that I did with Rory McDonald from 2019. I don't know if I'm going to do all of it because, you know, a lot of it, of course, is related to him being in Bellator at the time. The Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix, you know, all that stuff is dated. But he did talk a lot about his struggle balancing his newfound faith, newfound Christianity. He became very religious during his career and took a real interest in Christian theology. And having to come to grips with the balancing act between being a man of God or a religious individual and being someone who hurts people for a living, who makes money by inflicting pain on others. And he was at a real crossroads in his career at that point in time, where, if you recall, he was matched up against John Fitch in that tournament, and they fought to a draw. But because Rory was the champion, he ended up moving on to the next round. But after that fight, he said, I've really got to take a long look in the mirror and figure out what I want to do here. This is, you know, he said that his mind was not in the fight. He was thinking about other things of a religious nature during the fight. And it took him a little bit of time grappling with those two parts of his identity. And I spoke to him before that fight, where you could see that that was on the cusp, where that was really top of mind for him. And I thought that was a really interesting time for the Red King. So we'll revisit that conversation a little bit later on in the show, as well as interviews with a lot of guests. We've got an exhaustive guest list leading into this weekend's UFC 278 card, including the champion Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards, Paulo Costa, Luke Rockhold. I believe Dana White I will be speaking to later in the week, so I don't think it's going to be on this podcast, but make sure you go to tsn.ca/UFC for all of the conversations that take place this week. Also, a conversation with two other PFL fighters, one of whom was supposed to face Rory McDonald this past weekend, Magomed Umalatov, who a lot of people believed was the favorite. In fact, I think you could say was the consensus favorite to win the welterweight tournament. It was a 4-1 favorite over Rory McDonald. Was unable to compete due to visa issues stemming from the PFL moving the semifinals, or holding the semifinals, rather, in the United Kingdom. Him and the fellow Russian Denis Goltsov were basically disqualified from the tournament because of the location where the event was held. No accommodations made for them. So I'll talk to him, and then talk to Stevie Ray, who will be taking on Olivier Aubin-Mercier in the finale in the lightweight division of the PFL tournament, in hopes of winning $1 million. He'll be on the show. Looking forward to speaking with him. So a big thank you to all of our guests in advance. And of course to you, the listener, for tuning in, be it the podcast, which you get the entire show, or on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa. And if you're listening to this on the radio right now, you will be missing parts of the show. The entire version of the show is available wherever you get your podcasts. Look up the TSN MMA show, and you can find that wherever podcasts are found. And if you're listening on radio, thank you. Appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in. If you've just stumbled upon us, hopefully you can learn a little bit about mixed martial arts if you're not that close of an observer. And if you are, welcome to you as well. Always happy to have you here with me. So let's get started with UFC Fight Night. Vera versus Cruz. What a fight. And what a night for my TSN Edge recommended plays. Little Barry Horowitz pat on the back here. Don't know if you can hear that. Probably can, because I hurt my shoulder doing it. But went 3-0 in picks and hit my dart throw, which was Marlon Vera winning in round 4 or Marlon Vera winning in round 5. And Marlon Vera did just that, winning in round 4 against Dominic Cruz with a vicious head kick KO. Had that crazy front kick against Frankie Edgar. And now a beautiful head kick against Dominic Cruz, who was circling away and circled into the kick of Marlon Vera. Marlon Vera is one of these guys. The way that I explained him to my producer, Jason Pelter, this week when we were discussing this past weekend, I said he's like Piotr Jan with like a slower processor. Like Piotr Jan downloads information in the first round, and then at around midway through the second round, didn't happen against Aljo, mind you, but usually he can take that information, dissect it, figure out what the weaknesses of his opponent are, and capitalize. Marlon Vera does the same thing, but his processor isn't quite as fast. So it takes him a little bit more time. But once that processor kicks in, he's deadly. Like, I think that he actually is more dangerous as the fight goes on than Piotr Jan is. I think Piotr Jan becomes dangerous earlier, if that makes sense. But Chito Vera, round three gets stronger. Round four gets even stronger. Round five gets even better and better and better. This guy is a force to be reckoned with in mixed martial arts right now. This bantamweight division has just an embarrassment of riches. It's so many good, talented fighters right now. If you look at Vera, he has 7 knockdowns in his last 3 fights. 7! In the bantamweight, he's a 135-pound fighter. Unbelievable. And you look at this bantamweight division right now. Aljamain Sterling taking on TJ Dillashaw in October in Abu Dhabi. Piotr Jan taking on Sean O'Malley at the same event. Abu Dhabi, Fight Island, as some call it. This weekend, Jose Aldo against Merab Dvalishvili, 3-6. Coming up in a couple of weeks, Corey Sandhagen, 4th ranked, against Song Yadong, 10th ranked. It's a thing of beauty. What a time to be alive if you're a fan of the bantamweight division. We just had Ricky Simone getting a win over Jack Shore, who was previously undefeated. He's making noise. Frankie Edgar hoping to fight his final fight in November in New York. And then somebody new will move into the rankings. You got Umar Nurmagomedov, one of the best prospects in the sport today, undefeated. Rob Font, I didn't even mention. One of the best volume strikers in MMA right now. Just fantastic. Just an awesome time for this division. Now, if I could play some matchmaker, I think Vera should face the winner of Jan versus O'Malley. You either got the rematch with O'Malley, or you have him taking on Piotr Jan. I think you have Sandhagen and Yudong. I think the winner of that fight takes on the winner of Aldo versus Dvalishvili. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think Aldo versus Sandhagen or Dvalishvili would be a great fight. And I think that Yudong versus Sandhagen or Dvalishvili would be a great fight. Sign me up. I'd like to see Rob Font versus Ricky Simone. Let's make that happen. And I'd love to see Edgar versus Dominic Cruz, but I think it's a little bit too soon for Cruz to get back in there. Edgar versus Cruz would be a great fight. But how about Edgar versus Ricky Simone? That would be a fun one. Although I just matched Ricky Simone up with Font. What about Edgar versus Font? There's just so many. It's an embarrassment of riches. I could talk about it all day. And I could go and look at who's not ranked, and there's probably a lot of fighters that are worthy of being ranked that aren't ranked yet. A lot of up-and-coming prospects, I'm sure. It's just awesome. Gotta love it. So shout out to Chito Vera. Dominic Cruz, you know, it's funny. You see Dominic Cruz lose to a guy who's top 5 like Chito Vera. Ranked 5th on Saturday. And everybody's, he should retire. He's done. He's done. Are you kidding? Did you watch that fight? He was doing well against Vera. And Vera was ranked ahead of him. And he's younger. Dominic Cruz still has gas in the tank. If he wants to keep going, more power to him. I would love to see Cruz continue to fight. I love watching the guy perform. He's fantastic. Footwork's unbelievable. Fight IQ. Fantastic. This is the first time he's lost a non-title fight in his career. He's not even that old. How old is he now? 36? 37? He can still give you a couple more fights if he wants to. Again, if he wants to. Because I think at this stage in the game, you got to write him off as a future champion again. Or competing for a championship ever again. I think those days are done. And that's fine. Doesn't mean that he should retire. Unless that's all he wants in his career. If he wants to keep fighting, he wants to make $350,000 a fight or whatever it is, let the man continue to compete. I think we still have a lot more Dominic Cruz that we can see. And you also have to remember, he lost a huge chunk of his career to injuries. If he's feeling good, feels like he can perform, let's keep the ball rolling. Keep the train rolling. Perfect segue to our next bout, the co-main event. Nate the Train Landwehr against David Onama in one of the fights of the year. It's not quite Glover Yeary level for me, but just an awesome fight. You gotta love Nate the Train. I feel like he could have finished that fight, though, if he really wanted to. If it wasn't for the histrionics, I feel like Nate Landwehr finishes that fight. But either way, big underdog against David Onama comes through. Looked great. We did get one draw. I don't know how that card was scored. I have to look back. I think probably a Landwehr 10-8 in the second, and then they gave Onama the third in the first. I guess that makes sense. I wouldn't have given Onama the third personally, but he came to life. James Krause was asking him after the second round, are you with me? You still want to do this? You still want to do this? Took a little bit of time for Onama to confirm that, yes, indeed, he did want to continue to do this. But once that round started, you could see he was in it to win it. He was there. He poured every last drop of gas in the tank into that third round. But Nate the Train, big win for him. Improves to 3-2 in the UFC. And, you know, he has two losses, sure. But his wins are great wins. David Onama, Darren Elkins, Ludovit Klein. Like, these guys are good fighters. So I'm looking forward to what's next for Nate the Train. Had a great talk with him last week. But, man, he was great on Ariel's show, if you heard that on Monday. His post-fight speeches always sound like a WCW promo from, like, the 1990s. Love that. Love the Nate the Train promos. I could listen to those all day. I wish he would fight every month so I could hear those. Yasmin Jaregi defeats Yasmin Lucindo in the second best fight of the night. Two newcomers to the UFC. People were wondering why they were on the main card. And they delivered. They did what they needed to do to put on a great fight. So, congratulations to Yasmin on her win. Solid fight. Looked great. Both of them looked very good. They both have bright futures in the UFC. Azamat Mirzakhanov defeats Devin Clark. Mirzakhanov looked really solid. I feel like he could move down to 85, but he wants to stay at 205. Guys are both kind of on the smaller side for 205. He's fought at 85 before, Mirzakhanov. In fact, so is Devin Clark. Clark, actually, I like better at 205, but Mirzakhanov gets the job done. If you have UFC Fight Pass, go and watch, between rounds 2 and 3, just another all-time performance from Devin Clark's dad, David, on the in-between rounds. He was having a blast out there. You're telling him to calm down, but David Clark calms down for no man. So go back and watch that. Yeah, that guy's... I actually don't like Devin Clark fighting in front of a crowd because I want to hear David Clark. I think Devin will improve more under the tutelage of Vinny Lopez and Cody Donovan, two great coaches from Team Elevation. I think we're going to see some good things from Devin Clark in the future. Just wasn't his night on the weekend. Priscilla Cachoeira, it was her night on the weekend. 1:05, one of the fastest stoppages in bantamweight history by KO over Ariane Lipsky. Both of them kind of fighting up a division. Lipsky had some health complications, it seemed. Moves the fight up to 135, and Cachoeira delivers as an underdog. One of my TSN Edge recommended plays. Hope you're paying attention to those. And one that I lamented not making, that I always make, that I didn't make this past week. Gerald Meerschaert by submission. Death taxes Meerschaert by submission. This guy is always a threat to the necks of his opponent. And he was a sizable underdog against Bruno Silva. He won almost every second of that fight. He looked fantastic. Now working over at Killcliff FC under the tutelage of Henry Hooft. Solid corner with Bilal Muhammad there. You love to see it. Gerald Meerschaert looking great against Bruno Silva. One of my favorite guys in the sport. Always wish him success. Bruno Silva, I don't know what was wrong with him, though. He looked like he was off, and Gerald Meerschaert was very on. So Meerschaert definitely took advantage of... I don't know if Bruno Silva was just a little bit worried about Meerschaert's submission game that he was afraid to open up. I don't know what it was, but when he did try to hit Meerschaert, Meerschaert was not there. He had the speed of a meerkat on that night. I think meerkats are fast. I would imagine they're fast. Let's type it into Google. I'm going to find out right now, for you the listener, if meerkats are indeed fast. Are meerkats fast? They can travel at speeds of up to 20 miles per hour. That's moderately fast. Moderately fast. Fast-ish. Like the speed of one of those scooters. Be good to have that kind of speed in the octagon. pretty fast. We'll leave it at that. Angela Hill, another upset for Angie. Defeats Lupita Godinez by unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. I don't know what Lupita was doing in that fight. I don't know what her strategy was, but she barely was. And her coaches were imploring her, wrestle. So you can't blame the coaches. Lupita wasn't using her bread and butter, which is her grappling, which has been something that's stopped Angela Hill in the past. It was a confusing fight, to be honest. After Lupita Godinez's last fight, I said, if there's a Canadian right now that can become UFC champion, it's Lupita Godinez. And I know she's fighting on enemy soil. Angela Hill, based out of San Diego. But she just did not have a good game plan in that fight. I don't know. Well, listen, I can't say she didn't have a good game plan. Her coaches seemed like they were telling her to deliver a game plan that she wasn't delivering. So I don't know what happened, but she was like a 3-1 favorite. And that's the way the cookie crumbles. Every single female underdog on the card wins. Martin Budaj defeats Lucas Brzeski by split decision. I didn't agree with this one, but two heavy hitters in the cage. Brzeski came flying out of the gates in that first round, threw the kitchen sink at Budaj, couldn't put him away. And Budaj was landing big shots, but not a lot of them. Whereas Brzeski, it was kind of an accumulation versus power type situation, but it didn't seem like any of the shots of Budaj really did that much damage to Brzeski that would supplant the amount of accumulation Brzeski had with those big shots. We're talking heavyweight here. Volume at heavyweight is different than volume at bantamweight. These are big dudes. Either way, Budaj gets the win. Nina Nunes, another TSN Edge recommended play, along with Priscilla Cachoeira and the under 2.5 in Quinlan versus Jason Witt. All those cashed, so congratulations if you tailed the recommended plays. But Nina Nunes defeats Cynthia Calvillo by split decision. Should not have been a split decision. I thought this was a fairly definitive win for Nina Nunes, who, after the fight, took off the gloves and called it a career. And you know what? I got to talk a little bit about Nina Nunes here, because I think she deserves a lot of credit for how she ended her career. There was a time where she was 6-5 in the UFC. She started her career 1-3. Losses on the regional scene to Carla Esparza and Barb Honchak, who both had, of course, Carla Esparza is the champion of the strawweight division right now, but Barb Honchak fought in the UFC as well. And also to Casey Noland, went 1-3, then railed off 5 straight wins. Then got a shot in the UFC. Lost her first two fights to Juliana Lima and Justine Kish. Kish, rather. Maybe I'm a little bit hungry right now, talking MMA. Wouldn't mind a quiche. Quiche is an underrated food. But I'm not going to get too far off track. We already looked up whether meerkats are a fast animal or not. We're not going to start talking about different varieties of quiche. We're going to focus, keep our eyes on the Nina Nunes resume, and continue. Then goes on to win 4 in a row. Which in the UFC, that can be meaningful and it can be okay. But this is a meaningful run, because listen to this run. Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, whatever, good win. Liebarger had a cup of coffee in the UFC. But then these next three are important. Angela Hill, one of the most experienced fighters in UFC history. Randa Marcos, another one of the most experienced fighters in UFC history in these two in the strawweight division. And then Claudia Gadelha, who fought for a title, was a perennial top five fighter in the strawweight division. And that was a big win for Nunes, because that was a pretty dominant win. That was in Toronto. I remember it. UFC 231. The last fight, I believe, to take place at Scotiabank Arena, if I'm not mistaken. Was that the Holloway Ortega? Yeah. The last time we've seen. Can't believe it's been. It's going to be 4 years. That's crazy. 4 years since we've seen a bout at the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. That's a real shame. I think we're going to be seeing one sooner rather than later, but wow. That's a tough pill to swallow. It's been a long time. But yeah, those are her four in a row. And then her next one is against Tatiana Suarez, and nobody has fought Tatiana Suarez as tough as Nina Nunes did on that night. UFC 238, the last time the UFC was in Chicago. Let's come back to Chicago. I love that city. Hopefully we see the UFC back in Chicago in 2023. That'd be nice. I think that was the last time they were in Chicago. That was the Cejudo, and yeah. That crazy Shevchenko knockout as well. So, that's a great run. That's a great run. Then she lost to Dern. She admitted that she came back a little bit too soon after giving birth. Said she just was not into that fight. Then had this fight with Calvillo. Ends on a win. Retires after a solid performance and is looking to have more children with Amanda Nunes, her partner. Her wife, married, so, yeah. So, kudos to Nina Nunes on her retirement. Happy trails. Great way to end her career. Gabriel Benitez defeats Charlie Ontiveros. Ontiveros did what Ontiveros does, throw the kitchen sink at his opponent for the first 2 minutes of the fight. If his opponent is able to weather it, they usually are able to turn the tables on him. So Gabriel Benitez does just that. TKO round one. Tyson Nam. Whew. Returning off of a massive layoff after surgery. Defeats Ode Osborne. 3 minutes into the first round. Quite the win for Tyson Nam. Nice to see him back. He's a fun guy to watch in at flyweight. And from one first round KO by a Hawaiian to another, Josh Quinlan scores a first-round knockout over Jason Witt. Quinlan, that guy's got heavy hands, man. And then to open the card, Damon Blackshear and Yusuf Zalal fight to a majority draw. First two rounds to Blackshear. Third round to Zalal, 10-8 on two of the scorecards. Makes it a majority draw. So there you have it. Another great thing about the fight happening in California, we got to see the disclosed payouts, we got to see disclosed fight night weights. Gotta love the transparency of the California State Athletic Commission. Bonuses went to Landwehr versus Onama, no-brainer, slam dunk for fight of the night, one of the best fights of the year. Performance of the night, Chito Vera, Tyson Nam. Elsewhere in the world of mixed martial arts, PFL 8 took place in Cardiff, Wales. We'll talk just about the main card. We'll talk about the four fights on the main card, the tournament bouts. Delano Taylor defeats Rory McDonald, knockout just about 4 minutes into the first round. Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one for Rory McDonald because he had a pretty clear path to $1 million. And Delano Taylor showed up, looked great. Found out that week that he was going to be stepping in for Magomed Umalatov, who we'll talk to a little bit later in the show. And gets the win over Rory McDonald. He advances to the welterweight final against Sadibou Si, who defeated Carlos Leal by unanimous decision. Weird situation in the third. We saw a point taken away from Carlos Leal for a low blow that didn't even appear to be a low blow. It looked like it was on the belt line. First off, why are you taking a point for one single low blow in the fight? Secondly, check the replay, Jack. That was a legal blow. Either way, it would have been a unanimous decision for Sadibou Si regardless. 29-27 across the board would have been 29-28 across the board. Si advances to the finale against Delano Taylor. I think Taylor will be a favorite in that one. If I'm reading this properly, I think that Taylor will probably be about a minus 175 favorite if I had to guess. But we'll see. No pun intended. Ante Delija defeats Henan Fejeja. El Problema, is that what his name is? La Problema, that's what it is. La Problema. Henan Fejeja. And he beat him no problema. Ante Delija advances to his second straight heavyweight finale. And he will take on Matthias Scheffel, who defeated Juan Adams. Another short notice situation. Juan Adams finds out they flew him into Wales on Tuesday just in case. Finds out he's going to get the opportunity to fight to potentially win $1 million. Looked okay early on, but Scheffel was just landing the more damaging strikes throughout the entire fight and then gets a finish in the third round. So we'll see Delija versus Scheffel in the heavyweight finale. And I mean, let's be honest here. These tournaments are not shaping up the way that I'm sure the PFL would have hoped. You got Omari Akhmedov against Rob Wilkinson for the light heavyweight finale. Stevie Ray versus Olivier Aubin-Mercier. So Pettis is out for the second straight year. Light heavyweight division. Antonio Carlos Jr. pulls out due to ACL surgery. So he misses it. And then you got Delano Taylor, late notice participant in the tournament, taking on Sadibou C after Carlos Leal has a great story, beats Ray Cooper in the first round. In the first round of the playoffs. I think also in the first... No, I don't think he got a finish, but in the very first fight in the welterweight division of the tournament, coming off of their Challenger Series show, which Delano Taylor did as well. But, I mean, these finales leave a lot to be desired. And then, of course, you got this weekend's card. Kayla Harrison against Martina Jindrova. Chris Wade against Brandon Lochnane. Larissa Pacheco versus Olena Kolesnik. And Ryoji Kudo taking on Baba Jenkins. So you still have the opportunity for a Harrison versus Pacheco finale, which I think would be the biggest fight that they can have right now in the entire promotion. And then either Wade or Lochnane against Kudo or Baba Jenkins. I like both of those matchups as well. I think Ryoji Kudo is a very exciting fighter to watch. So I think that this event, PFL 9, will make up for kind of the lack of good matchups in the other divisions. But the season has not gone well for the PFL. I mean, it's just, we can call it out for what it is. But that's what happens when you have a season, right? When you have this format, it's a meritocracy. Now, can you still call it a meritocracy when you're booking events in the UK that are going to disqualify two of your top fighters because they can't get a visa? Is that a meritocracy? I mean, you got to roll with the punches. But you have an event in New York. You know you have fighters that are from Russia that aren't getting visas easily in the United Kingdom. Why don't you hold those fights in New York? Nobody's going to hold it against you that you don't have four tournament fights on the same night in these events in London and Wales. They're probably just happy to have you there. You're delivering a lot of fights. That 13-fight card. You're there for a night of action at the Copper Box Arena in London, England, like they will be this weekend. At least they're getting some bang for their buck. Even if you're taking two of the fights out of Wales and putting them in New York. Like, for example, if you said, well, we don't know if these guys are going to get visas, so we're going to move Olivia Aubin-Mercier and Alex Martinez to Wales, and we're going to move Stevie Ray, who's from the United Kingdom, against Anthony Pettis to Wales. Think these guys are going to complain? Still paying big taxes in New York anyways. May as well pay the taxes over in the United Kingdom. Take those two fights. Take the lightweight division. You can take the whole lightweight division. Move it over there. Then you take the Goltsov fight. And you're going to give the folks in New York a better main event anyways with Umalatov against Rory. I just don't understand it. I mean, I love the PFL's format. I really do. It's a great format. And I think that it's a very interesting concept. I think they do a lot of things really well. This one, I think that they really dropped the ball on. I think it's pretty clear. They could have made this work. And speaking of the PFL, if you were upset about those things happening, well, they sure made you forget about it on Monday. Shane Burgos appears on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani and announces that he's moving over to the PFL. And I think very wisely, it looks like he's going to be doing it in the 155-pound division. And if you're going to be Shane Burgos and you have to cut a crazy amount of weight to make 45, you know you're going to be busy during a PFL tournament because it's only a certain amount of months of the year that they're doing these events. 155 is the spot. And I also think 155 is an easier division for him than 145. I think that the talent pool is a lot thinner at 155. But Burgos is going to make some good money in the PFL, regardless of whether or not he makes the million. And then if he gets the million on top of that, I can understand why he went to the PFL. And you know what? Always talking to whenever I spoke to Shane Burgos, he was always, I'm a UFC guy. I want to be where the best fighters are. But hey, man, money talks. And he said that the UFC couldn't match the offer. But we saw today, if you read, there was an interview I think Kevin Ioli did with Dana White. Dana White said that someone messed up, that he wanted to have Burgos back. Mistakes were made. But hey, the UFC's pain might end up being Shane Burgos and the PFL's gain. I love watching Shane Burgos fight. He's going to add a real element of excitement to that lightweight division next year if that's where he ends up doing the tournament. I think that is where he should do it. I think he can hang with any of those lightweights. So, kudos to Shane Burgos and the PFL for adding a really solid name to their roster going forward. Might be their biggest signing ever. Outside of, I guess, Akayla Harrison. But, I mean, in terms of a free agent signing from another promotion, you could say Rory, but, I mean, we saw that Rory was a little bit past his prime. Shane Burgos is in his prime right now. Like, is he even 30 yet? I think he's probably 31, maybe, if I had to guess. 31 years old. He's in his prime right now. Great signing for the PFL. And great news to folks that are looking forward to their tournaments next year, because Burgos is going to always bring the excitement. Excitement quotient will always be high with Shane Burgos. Bellator 284 was this past Friday in lovely Sioux Falls, South Dakota, at the Sanford Pentagon, where we had Goichi Yamauchi defeating Neiman Gracie. This was a great fight. And Goichi Yamauchi, I thought that this was going to be a slam dunk for Gracie, to be honest. I thought he was going to be a lot bigger. Yamauchi, if I'm not mistaken, has fought at 45. Yeah, he's fought in featherweight before. So he's up two divisions from a division that he's been able to compete at in the past. It's like Anthony Pettis when he moved down to 45. He's fought 45, 55, and 70. Yamauchi, the same thing, but scores a knockout against Neiman Gracie. Perfectly timed KO. With a really strong win for Yamauchi going forward. That's a big statement win for him over Neiman Gracie. Heavyweight division, the co-main event. Very unfortunate ending. Valentin Moldovsky pokes the eye of tall Steve Mowry. And it is rendered a no contest, as Mowry is unable to continue. Alimele McFarland misses weight and defeats Bruna Ellen. This was a pretty close fight. I don't know. I thought Alimele might lose this fight, and it would have been three losses in a row. I just think that the best days of Alimele McFarland might be behind her. She could prove me wrong. Maybe she will. But this was not the most impressive win for Alimele McFarland, in my opinion. I'm eager to see what she can continue to do. I hope that she can make the weight. She has missed weight, I believe, on more than one occasion. Never mind. So she's never missed weight. I apologize. So she misses weight here. And eager to see what's next for her. But would like to see more of a statement win from Alimele McFarland. That said, in the win column, she was undefeated and had lost two in a row, and now she wins once again against Bruna Ellen, who's a solid fighter. Gokhan Sarikam defeats Saeed Salma. This fight didn't have my full attention, but it appeared to be a pretty controversial scorecard in the favor of Sarikam, but I can't comment on it because I didn't, the fight didn't have my full attention, so in fairness to the judges, I'm not going to just hop on the robbery train without seeing exactly what happened. And the big one for us Canadians here, Aaron Jeffrey defeats Austin Vanderford 1 minute and 25 seconds into the very first round, takes the fight on short notice and rises to the occasion. You gotta love it. Austin Vanderford's ranked number 2 in the division. You know, Aaron Jeffrey couldn't get into the UFC, lost twice on Contender Series, then he was a free agent, won the CFFC middleweight championship. The UFC wouldn't sign him, from what I understand. Goes to Bellator. Now, two fights in, he's already right in the mix for the middleweight championship. That is sometimes the benefit of being passed over. We're seeing Brendan Lochman potentially could win $1 million, is making good money in the PFL. Austin Vanderford fought for the title in Bellator, was passed over on the Contender Series. We're seeing Tan Lee winning a championship over in one championship was passed over by the UFC. Sometimes it can be a blessing in disguise for fighters like Aaron Jeffrey. Got a really quick opportunity, capitalized on it, and now he's in the title mix. Boom, two fights. And looks fantastic against Austin Vanderford. I thought he'd win that fight, but I did not think he'd win it like that. That was an impressive, impressive performance, and exactly what Aaron Jeffrey needed to put himself on the map, if he wasn't already. Also saw the debut of Pat Downey. That was quick. Beats Keys Nelson in 36 seconds. Deanna Bennett beats Justine Kish, two UFC veterans. I think Deanna Bennett fought. I know she fought on was on The Ultimate Fighter. Did she ever get a UFC fight? Yeah, she fought on the finale against Melinda Fabian and had a draw and then didn't get signed. For shame. She has lots of Invicta fights. Wow. Good to see her in Bellator now. I know she's had a couple fights there now. All right. There you have it. Next Bellator card is not until September 23rd. So if you only watch Bellator, you got like a couple weeks. You got like a month off. So to the loyalists of Bellator, it's paying off. You got so much time to yourself. I don't think such a person exists. But if they do, more power to them. But if they're like, no, I only watch Bellator. The other stuff, garbage. I'm a Bellator guy. You can try to convince me that the UFC is good, but just can't get into it. I don't think that person exists. But again, hey, if they do, if you're that guy, please send me a message on Twitter. I'm eager to meet you and to hear your rationale. I have a feeling my DMs are probably not going to be blowing up this week. If they are, it'll be for reasons other than somebody being a Bellator diehard. Not that there's anything wrong with that. UFC 278 is this weekend at the Vivint Arena. What is Vivint? I don't know. Looks like some sort of a housing company. Let's look this up. I don't want to upset the fine people at Vivint. Yeah, it's a public smart home company. Founded in the United States and Canada. Headquarters in Provo, Utah. All right, Vivint. What's the Canadian angle to this? Because, hey, if we've got a Canadian angle, we can go with this. I guess they're just they have... you can use whatever it is that they do in Canada. I guess it's monitoring. It's like home monitoring and cameras and stuff. Formerly known as the Delta Center. The house that Karl Malone built. Here are the names over the years. The Delta Center. The Salt Lake Ice Center. That's a weird name. The Energy Solutions Arena. And now the Vivint Smart Home Arena. It's been since 2015. Who knew? The fine people of Utah did. That's who. So again, I veered off the path. Let's get back onto the interstate. And head towards Salt Lake City for UFC 278. Kamaru Usman taking on Leon Rocky Edwards. It's a rematch. What, like 10 years in the making? It's been a while. Let's preview this. Let's take a look at some of these lines. Go through it. Fight by fight. Kamaru Usman, minus 400, according to our friends at FanDuel Canada. Plus 285 for Leon Rocky Edwards. This has been an interesting one for me because I'm trying to figure out exactly how this one goes. Personally, I think the value is on Usman by decision at minus 110, basically even money. I don't think Usman's going to get a finish. I don't think he's going to knock Edwards out. And I certainly don't think he's going to get a submission. Though the submission props are pretty juicy for both of them. But I like to use my decision prop. I think minus 110, you're getting good value on him. I think that his best path to victory is the path of least resistance. Get takedowns, hold Edwards there, make his life miserable, rinse, repeat. Now, will he do that? I don't know. Will he test the striking that has been much improved under the tutelage of Trevor Whitman? Maybe. But I think that if you're Kamaru Usman, you can dominate this fight on the ground. And I think that's what he's going to look to do. Now, could he get like a ground and pound KO? Maybe. Odds on that, plus 270. Paulo Costa, minus 340. The comeback on Luke Rockhold, plus 250. You know, I couldn't put minus 340 on Paulo Costa against anybody right now, based on what we've seen from him in recent years. Like, the Israel fight, saying that he drank too much wine the night before, then coming to face Marvin Vettori, refusing to cut any weight, and basically having it held at 205 because he just did not want to make 185 for what, because his explanation made no sense. Like, this is not somebody that I can rely upon at minus 140, or minus 340. By KO is minus 160. Not going to do that either. The decision prop doesn't have a ton of value either. Well, it's plus 500, actually. Maybe that might be the direction I would go in if I was going to take this fight. But Rockhold, I think, has a shot. Like, if Rockhold can grapple with Costa and make it kind of a dirty fight, we'll see what happens. But Rockhold's chin has not been holding up for him in recent years either. So this one's just a total pass for me. I don't have a strong read on this one. Fight starts round 2 at minus 205 might be worth parlaying. Even fight starts round 3 at plus 138. Like, you know, that I think has some value as well. I don't think this one's going to end early. But who knows? Costa hits hard. He was hitting Vitor with some big shots. And Vitor just has like a granite chin. Can't knock that guy out. Might have one of the best chins in the UFC, honestly. Underrated from that perspective. Mirav Dwalishvili, minus 125. Jose Aldo, minus 102. In a three-round fight, I might have to lean Dwalishvili here. I just think that his gas tank will allow for him to pursue takedown after takedown after takedown for three straight rounds and stay out of trouble. Aldo could catch him with something, but Mirav, he's been able to take down just about everybody in the UFC. And while I hate to bet against a guy as good as Jose Aldo, I just think in this kind of a circumstance, we've got three rounds. If this was a five-round fight, it might be a little bit different. I think Aldo would be dangerous in the later rounds. But I think Mirav Dwalishvili, minus 125. I wonder, when the Aldo round 3 prop is released, that might be worth a look too, as like a hedge. Because I think that's really what Aldo's best path is to get a third round finish. But it's not like people are finishing Mirav Dwalishvili. The only time he's been finished in the UFC was that weird submission finish against Ricky Simone, which I don't personally think should have been a submission finish. I think that should have gone to the scorecards. But it is what it is, and it was what it was. So I will take the machine, minus 125. That'll probably be one of my recommended plays. Alexander Romanov against Marcin Tybura. Romanov minus 500, Tybura plus 340. This is an interesting one because I personally think the Romanov decision is very live here. I think that we've seen Romanov, he's a solid grappler, but Tybura is a really good grappler too. And if this goes to the ground, I think Tybura is going to know what to do there. Like, Romanov against a lot of these other heavyweights that don't have a ground game, he can submit them. He can knock them out. The submission prop for Romanov at plus 375 is kind of cool, too. Like, that's not bad. But I think that this fight goes to a decision, to be honest. I think that if you can get the, the props aren't out yet from FanDuel. But if you can get, like, a fight starts round 3 at a good price, I would take that. And, personally, I like the Romanov decision angle. That would be the angle I would take. Plus 275 is where what it's at elsewhere. It'll probably be around the same when FanDuel opens their lines. So I'll wait. I can't make a pick yet without knowing the line, but if it's in that vicinity, like the plus 300 vicinity, I think that's probably where I'm going to look for that particular fight. Tyson Pedro versus Henry Hunsaker. This one, if you can get a good price on Pedro by submission, go in that direction. I think that's how this fight ends. I think that's the path of least resistance. And I think that that is what Tyson Pedro will look to do here. He'll look to take it to the ground and get a sub. So that's the angle I would take on that one. He's a massive favorite. Minus 900, the comeback on Hunsaker, plus 520. Jared Gordon, minus 330. Leo Santos, plus 240. This is an interesting one because I think Gordon's best path is with his wrestling. You could also probably outvalue him, but this price tag is really big on Jared Gordon, and I'm just going to totally pass on this one. Lucia Pudilova, minus 146. Wu Yanan, plus 114. I like the Pudilova by decision prop here. Once that comes out, we'll see what it is. But if you're getting plus money on that, that is the angle I would take. I think that she will cruise to a decision in this one. And if there's a unanimous decision prop, that is another way that you can approach this one, in my opinion. Nice to see Pudilova back in the UFC. Iori Killing, minus 180. Jay Perrin, plus 140. I will be parlaying Iori Killing with AJ Fletcher. Potentially. But I need to see what the props look like. That's what I'm waiting for right now, is I want to see what these the props look like for the KO prop on Iori Killing and the KO prop for AJ Fletcher are what I'm interested in. or the Fletcher inside the distance prop, if there's a price on that. Because that's what I would take. Fletcher inside the distance will definitely, if that's like plus 200 or more, I will be taking that as a recommended play. This guy just has so many different ways to win fights inside the distance. He's always looking for the finish. And I think Anji Luce trains with a lot of good fighters, but I think Fletcher is somebody to watch going forward. I know he had a tough fight against Semelsberger, but I think he's a solid fighter. Sean Woodson, minus 350. Luis Saldana, plus 255. Long price here for Woodson, and the reason I say that is because if Woodson shows up, he'll win this fight. My fear is that every now and then we see Woodson's not into it. It seems like he's not into it. Now, I believe he's training under James Krause now. I think something has clicked with him where he's starting to win fights. The KO prop would be interesting to me. The decision prop for Woodson is only like plus. It looks like in the it's going to be in the even money range, so I'd stay away from that one. But this one's kind of a pass for me, honestly. Miranda Maverick minus 530. Shanna Young plus 360. Maverick by submission is the way that I think this one ends. Maverick inside the distance is probably where I will go if I can get plus money on that. I think she more likely wins. Although, you know what? Shanna Young is training with Saif Saud now. That always worries me. I don't like betting against Saif Saud trained fighters, especially if they're plus 360 underdog. Like, I don't like laying chalk against Saif Saud trained fighters. That's never a good recipe to make money. And Amir Albazi is taking on Francisco Figueiredo. Albazi minus 440, Figueiredo plus 310. Whew. That is a pass for me as well. Yeah, there's nothing I see that I like here. That's just going to be a pass. So there you have it. That's UFC 278. A solid, solid card. Unfortunately, I'm not in Salt Lake City. All right, time to get to our guests. As I mentioned off the top, we got a lot of the different fighters from UFC 278. We've got Kamaru Usman. We've got Leon Edwards. We've got Paulo Costa. We've got Luke Rockhold. And then the other guest that I had mentioned previously, we've got Magomed Umalatov talking about his unfortunate situation, being unable to compete in Wales due to a visa issue. We've got Stevie Ray, who is in the lightweight finale of the PFL tournament. So let's get to those interviews right now. We'll start off with the pound-for-pound king of the UFC, the welterweight champion of the world, the Nigeria Nightmare, Kamaru Usman. He is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the UFC today. He is Kamaru Usman, the welterweight champion of the world. When I say the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, does that mean anything to you? Do you subscribe to the idea of pound-for-pound?
No, it doesn't necessarily mean a lot to me. It just means that at any given day, if anything happens, I might whoop somebody's ass. So I'll whoop most people's ass if it came down to it. So, you know, it's just it's a conversation piece. It's a good conversation piece for people. But pound for pound is it's something for people to talk about. And, you know, hopefully one day I get a chance to really show people what that means.
What I believe it means is if you take Kamaru Usman and you put him in a flyweight's body, you take Kamaru Usman and you put him in a heavyweight's body, is he going to beat every other person in that division? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think that your skill set translates to every single division that the UFC has. And that's why when they call you the pound-for-pound king, it makes a lot of sense to me.
You know what? I think you should definitely write the criteria of what it means to be pound-for-pound, because that's exactly right. You know, some people think it's a popularity contest, to where some people think, oh, it's just, you know, this guy fought recently, so yeah, he's the pound for pound. He fought in the last 2 months or 3 months. It is what it is, you know. That definition right there, what you just put out, that's exactly, to me, what pound for pound means.
But with that, I think it does make a lot of sense that you are considered the number one pound for pound fighter, but you have one division that's on your mind for this weekend, Leon Edwards. He's improved a lot. Everybody's talked about that for some time, but you said something in an interview with Brett Okamoto that I thought really stood out, which was that everybody kind of keeps moving the goalposts. You know, the next challenge is always going to be the one that beats you. That, you know, when is this finally going to be behind us, where we're going to have a new welterweight champion? Is it hard to satisfy the MMA enthusiast by doing what you've been doing, by dominating, by beating people in rematches, wiping out the division? When is enough going to be enough?
There is no satisfying them. And I guess, I know in the recent years, that's kind of what I've come to that realization, and I'm okay with it. You know, it's as long as you keep giving them something to do, that they will keep moving that goalpost. And so I keep giving them something to talk about. So, you know, they can keep moving that goalpost, but I'm still here at the top. As long as you're still in that conversation, you're the guy that they're moving the goalpost. I gave up on pleasing, you know, the fans or other people a long time ago. Now I'm pleasing myself. If I'm able to go out there and do what I set out to do, what I trained to do, that's the most important thing to me.
Well, I think what makes you special is you kind of moved your own goalposts. In January, in a feature with GQ, you talked about potentially moving up to light heavyweight, and I'm sure a lot of people are asking you about this week. But if you were to do that, and you win at light heavyweight, if people don't think you're the greatest of all time, then are they just a hater? I mean, nobody's ever done that before. And I don't know if anybody will be able to do it again.
1,000%. You know, the world is just filled with haters now. People just wake up nowadays with just, you know what? That guy's too great. No, he's not good at this. No, he's bad at that. Or he looks bad. Or he has no hair. Or this is that. This, people are just haters. You know, it is what it is. But, yeah. I'm going to go out there and do what I want to do. And what I want to do is not only just dominate this division like I have, but move up to light heavyweight, take that belt, defend that belt, and maybe come back down to 70 and whoop all those guys again. So, you know, I do what I want at this point. And as long as I still have the thrill to stay here and keep doing this, then the sky's the limit for me.
Well, you won't fight at 185 for the championship because of Israel. He represents Nigeria. You like having more than one Nigerian champion in the UFC. And you're also not going to move to heavyweight because there's another Usman there now. The only brothers to win the Ultimate Fighter, yourself and your brother Muhammad. What did that mean to you to share that with
you? That's funny, too. No, I'm just playing. I'm playing. That means a lot. I mean, it was a rocky start to the sport for him and trying to find his footing. But this is, if he's anything like me, then success is going to drive him. Success is going to motivate him to continue to grow and learn in the sport. And he's going to be, right up there at the top of the division, fairly soon. So I love what he's doing. I love the fact that he's able to achieve that little bit of success, because what people, especially nowadays, when people don't see that gratification, then it's, they start to question themselves, like, what am I doing this for? So I love the fact that he was able to see that. And now he knows what's going to come when that success, he's starting to feel a little bit of it. So I hope this drives him to the top.
Do you think it just took time for him to be ready for the UFC? Like several years ago, before you were the champion, I remember seeing him walk you to the cage, and the look of intensity on his face really stood out to me. And I saw him backstage and I said, hey, I'm Aaron. Nice to meet you. And I said, you seem like you're very intense. And then he, had a big smile on his face because you just won your fight. And he said, yeah, I'm Kamaru's brother. You're going to see me in the UFC one day. And of course, here we are. So do you think just now was the right time for things to finally click for him to make it to the UFC?
Everything is God's plan. So if God says this is the time, then this is the time. If God says this is just giving you a little taste, then, whenever it's his time will come. Even for me, I still feel that I'm growing in the sport. And so he's got a long way to go. He's got a lot to improve on, a lot to work on, but that's the fun and that's the beauty of the sport. It's so rewarding. As long as you continue to soak up the knowledge and he continues to go out there and make a splash, I think he's going to enjoy the ride all the way up.
Now, the next candidate to face you at welterweight in the eyes of many is Khamzat Chimaev. He's in the main event against Nate Diaz next month. What do you think of that matchup?
I could care less. I don't really give a shit about it. Right now, all I'm worried about is Leon Edwards. Leon is the biggest, baddest guy in the division right now, and I have to go out there and try to slay that giant. So that's all I'm worried about. God willing, I get through this, then I'll worry about the next guy. If it's Yuri, then it's Yuri. If it's Jan, then it's Jan. It doesn't matter who it is, but, those are the guys that I'm worried about.
Well, forget about him facing you for a moment, but just as a matchup in general, him versus Nate Diaz, does that make any sense to you?
It just to be honest, it doesn't really make any sense at all because, if you want to fight the best, you want to be the best in this division, you want to fight the champion, then you got to knock off those guys that are right below them. That's why we have a ranking system, correct? So to fight a guy that's not even ranked, not even a lightweight or welterweight or middleweight or featherweight, and which I don't think that guy would be ranked at featherweight anyways. And it makes no sense, but it is what it is. To each his own. If that gets him a title shot, then we'll sit down, we'll talk with the execs if it makes sense, and we'll see what we do.
Well, for you, if it makes dollars, it makes sense. You've been headlining all these events. You got pay-per-view points coming your way for this event in Salt Lake City. That's this Saturday. Yourself taking on Leon Edwards. Always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for this, champ.
Thank you. I appreciate you, Aaron.
It's the moment he's been waiting for since joining the UFC. Leon Edwards challenging for the welterweight championship of the world. It's this Saturday at UFC 278. Does it mean more to you to face a guy in Kamaru Usman who is the last individual to actually get a win over you, albeit many years ago?
Yeah, 100%. It definitely adds to the story, it adds to my motivation to become a world champion. So, to have the last guy to beat me, to now I'm about to fight him for the world title is the perfect story, and I look forward to becoming a world champion.
Do you use the story of your life as fuel? You've been through so much in your life, but at the same time, that kind of puts a lot of pressure on you. Like, if you want to have the ending to the story that you want, it's, getting to the absolute pinnacle after all that you've been through in your life. How do you look at it? Do you look at it as something that puts pressure on yourself to?
No, I don't think it's pressure. For me, I use it as fuel and I use it as motivation to push through and to keep doing what I'm doing. And obviously, it's been a long, long road to get to this position, and I feel very belonging, and I feel like this is how it's meant to play out, and I'm looking forward to Saturday night.
Tell me about your shirt. Strap season.
Strap season. Yeah, so you can see it first. It was created by my sponsor, Strap Season, what I've been tagging on social media, and just basically Strap Season time to focus and become a world champion, and this is a season to it, and perfect season, Strap Season.
Since the pandemic, your career has been a little bit odd. You had the fight against Bilal Muhammad that ended with a very unfortunate eye poke, and then a fight against Nate Diaz, who isn't really ranked in the welterweight division. Do you feel that plays to your advantage because Kamaru Usman hasn't been able to see the best of what you have to offer, how much you've grown in the amount of time since you fought prior to the pandemic?
A little bit. I think I've grown leaps and bounds over the last 3 years, and I think Saturday night you'd be able to see more, and I think having someone like Kamaru would help bring that out. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, this has been a long road. I've switched my mindset from thinking about obviously the ups and downs to more just getting better. And I think Saturday night will show and play out as meant to.
Well, speaking of going to the gym and getting better, people keep talking about, oh, Kamaru's going to take him down. It's going to be like the last fight. Don't people think that Leon Edwards knows this, that that's something that you've got to work on? Since that was your last loss, the champions since that time have been Tyron Woodley, an NCAA Division I wrestler, and of course Usman, a national champion Division II wrestler. You're always looking up to the champion. I'm guessing you've been working on your takedown defense for 5, 6 years to an extent where it's almost impenetrable at this point.
Yeah, 100%. Like, everyone said, like rocket science, like it's going to be shooting. 100% it's going to be shooting, and that is what I'm prepared for. I'm prepared for the best Kamaru Usman there is. And, so, like I said, I'm ready for anywhere to fight those on the feet, on the ground, and it's going to be a good fight.
Did you have to teach yourself to enjoy wrestling? I know there are a lot of people that take their, I guess, number one dialect in MMA. For you, I imagine that's striking. I'm sure you love that element of the game. Did you have to kind of teach yourself to enjoy grappling and enjoy wrestling in the same way that you enjoy striking?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Over the last 7 years, I've dedicated myself to it. I've started to enjoy it. Sometimes I enjoy it, sometimes better than striking, and just the little details of it, and how much I've learned and how much I've grown while doing it. So, yeah, definitely. I taught myself to enjoy the whole game, not just striking, but the rest of it, the jiu-jitsu, the Greco, everything. I like the whole game of MMA.
And did you bring in wrestlers that made your life miserable over the last couple of years? Like the people that, where you go into practice and you're like, yeah, this is going to suck.
Yeah, 100%. You have them, especially in training camps, and always like routine after routine and just constantly beating the body up, but it all pays off, you know.
Could you see yourself getting better as, I guess, the months, the years went on to a point where, like how much would you say, if you look at the Leon Edwards from the first fight with Usman, in terms of your wrestling or your takedown defense, like what would you rank that compared to now?
I think it's two different people, you know. When I first fought Kamaru, I was only doing mixed martial arts for 4 or 5 years, and just that's with martial arts in general. As Kamaru was coming from like a wrestling background, wrestling like colleges and stuff, and I walked into a gym at the age of 17 just from being on the street, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think I've learned a lot over the years. I've grown a lot over the years, physically and mentally, and I think that was showing this fight.
Now, separate yourself from this for a second. I want you to be objective here. Could Kamaru Usman beat the champion at 205 pounds? Like, do you think that he has the skill set that would allow him to do that and the size that would allow him to do that if you were to guess? And I know Jiří, I believe, is represented by the same management as you, so it's, try to take a step back from that as well.
I don't know. I haven't looked much into it or looked for, like, their technique versus his technique. Probably not. He's not that big, Kamaru. He's very muscly. Well, he's got small legs and he's a big upper body and he's not very tall. I don't know. He's a fighter in the day. Anybody can beat anybody, you know. But if I was betting, I'd probably go to like the 205 style.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of people would be. I mean, it's tough to move up one weight class, let alone two. If you're able to make 170 pounds, it's probably not in your best interest to move up to 205 where these guys are like 235 pounds on fight night.
Exactly. They're big dudes, man. You know, big, strong dudes. And he's just, I don't know what he's doing. He's calling out Canelo. He's calling out 205ers. Just like matches that won't be made just to stay relevant, you know, and stay like in the media.
Do you have a dream fight? Like, if you were to call out something outlandish, what would that be? Like, give me a fight that if you could make yourself against anybody in the world, just, you know, for fun and the, you know, the entertainment value, what would that be?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I haven't thought much into it or who I'll call out, you know. Probably like an old great, like a GSP or something like that. Just to test myself against him, you know.
I like that. I was hoping you'd say like Jake Paul in MMA, just because I think that would be fun for people to watch. He wouldn't have a shot against you, and it would just be a lot of, you know, for entertainment's sake.
Yeah, I'll smoke Jake Paul. He's the, nah, I'm another level.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But that's why I think that for the entertainment, I'd like to see Rocky Edwards against Jake Paul in MMA.
MMA, that'd be good. That'd be good.
I'm not sure they'd sanction that one.
Easy money.
What do you think of Utah so far? Have you been to the state of Utah before? And what's your experience been like so far? I know you've been there for quite some time, getting acclimated.
Yeah, it's good. I didn't know where it was at start, but since being there, it's got some beautiful mountains and actually went on a hike. I never hiked in my life and actually went on a hike and it was good. My first time here, the people are nice, the food is good, so it's all good.
You've never been on a hike before in your entire life?
Never in my life. Hike is not really a black people sport, to be honest with you. So my manager, Tim White, took me in on a hike and yeah, it was good. That was fun.
What did you think of it? I mean, I didn't realize that there was a racial divide when it came to hiking, but I'd love to hear your opinion.
It's like a white people sport. Black people don't go hiking. But it was good. It was fun. Just walking, eh? Just walk outdoors up a hill. But it was good. Get out in nature. In Birmingham, not many like mountains or hiking trails, you know. So to have like one on your doorstep, it was fun. I love getting out in nature.
Well, when you get back, maybe for your YouTube channel, you can go to the streets of Birmingham, like where you grew up, and got into street fights, and ask people if they want to go for hikes with you and see what they say.
Probably got stabbed. Hike. But yeah, nah, I might try to do another one when we get back to the UK. It was fun. It was good to be outdoors.
Yeah, I'll provide transportation. We'll go to the moors of Scotland and go for a hike. What do you think?
I'm on it. Let's go.
All right, Leon. Best of luck, UFC 278. I'm glad we can have a little bit of a lighthearted ending to this one when we have such a serious task ahead of you with Kamaru Usman. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Great to see Luke Rockhold back in action, the co-main event at UFC 278 against Paulo Costa. Does fight week feel any different for you this time around? It's been a while since you've had one.
They don't change too much, do they? It feels good, though, man. It feels – I don't have the nerves, you know. I mean, like, I'm at this one at a different stage in my life, and it's a different type of hunger. And I think the last – obviously, I took 3 years off, but even years before that, I mean, I was forcing the issue a lot, you know, kind of like compromised by injuries and just chasing it, going to Florida and really trying to be someone I wasn't. And trying to figure it all out. And the last few years have really kind of helped me understand who I am as a person and what I want next and, you know, why I'm doing this thing.
So there's a little bit to unpack there. So first off, explain why this is a different kind of hunger than you've had in the past.
I'm very present, you know, and I just want to do myself justice in the fight game. I feel like obviously winning multiple world titles, it was a great feat. I still don't think that was nearly like, you know, tells the tale of who I am and how great I am in this sport. I think I've lost sight of that, and I started to force the issue, and I tried to do too much. You know, when you try to do too much, you force things and you hold on to the outcome and you can't really be the best you can be. So I lost sight of that. And the years away really helped me navigate health and my body. And coming back to the fight game is, you know, figuring out what I want to do next. You know, you get caught and lost in this whirlwind of fighting, and you're always training for a fight or recovering from a fight, or there's a fight on the horizon, and it limits your ability to grow and or going to fights and being, you know, sponsorships and different occasions. It's like you're constantly wrapped in this whirlwind. You can't mature as a person. So know what you want to do next after the fight game. So figuring my life out, what I do it for, and it really brings out the best. Martial arts has always brought out the best in me. It brings out my inspiration, my creativity, and losing sight of that for a while was necessary. And coming back is even more necessary.
One important thing about that, when you've taken this kind of time away, a lot of people don't get the chance to train for themselves. Right? Like if you're got an opponent lined up, you're trying to figure them out stylistically, what you can do best in those situations, but you rarely get to focus on self-improvement. Is that what you think was the biggest asset to this time away?
That's a great point. I think it plays a huge role. You know, getting in the gym is like, you know, reaching sobriety too. And like not, you know, I'm not, you know, I've been 7 months now. I haven't drank, and it was my body was deteriorating because I was drinking a little bit on the weekend. I was partying on the weekends, but like training a bit, and I was never really like, you can never really rebuild yourself. So cutting all that out and just a constant process of rebuilding myself and knowing, you know, what I want to do. And so getting in the gym, it was just, the first process was just identifying who I was, you know, getting back to the old me, and then just training and finding the love for fighting. And then within that process of like, you know, I still got it. I'm still the man. And that gave me the understanding that, you know, going with Perillo and Cheeto and being around these guys, it made me love the sport again and find out that I was still just as good or better than anybody in the game. And then I was like, okay, Paulo Costa, let's fucking do this.
All right, when you also mentioned that when you were in Florida, you tried to be something you weren't. Can you unpack that for me as well?
Say what again? When what?
You said earlier, when you went to Florida, you were trying to be something you weren't. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, I know. I mean, like, you lose sight of what we do it for. And especially when you reach the pinnacle, the mountaintop, and then you try to chase, like, you know, what's broken, what's this, what's that. And you go to different places to try to practice discomfort or go to certain, you know, like trying to find out what was the problem, you know what I mean? What's this, what's that? And you're forcing it. Anytime you're forcing things, like you can't naturally like understand and digest what is really going on, because I was just caught up in like trying to fix things, you know, rather than really kind of digesting and understanding what the problem is, you know. And that's just like, you got to be in your zone. You got to be like where you drive creativity and inspiration, and then push yourself outside your comfort zone there. You know, Florida was kind of sucking from my soul. You know, California is my home, and the mountains and the weather, and you know, it's like, it's always something to look up to, and it drives me and it pushes me. And being around, you know, good people and good energy, and then pushing yourself through that.
All right, so you always give me great philosophical answers. You're a very thoughtful guy, so I feel like I can ask you thoughtful questions. Who is Luke Rockhold, and who isn't Luke Rockhold? Like, if you could point to a time in your life where you're probably your most authentic self, what about you is your most authentic self, and when were you your most inauthentic self? If you could look back at the last couple of years and point to a specific time.
I mean, I was myself. I'm more of myself than I've ever been. Like I said, you don't have a chance to mature and grow and understand who you are in the fight game because you're just so caught up. But, you know, it's like, I definitely had a better sense of who I was before I won the title. Once I won the title, there was a shift, and you can see it in my fight style. I was forcing the issue. And from the first Bisping fight to the second Bisping fight, you see a completely different fighter. You know, how patient and, you know, I was very patient and just read my opponent, waited for my openings, and I attacked and killed. You know, it's like with the second fight, I forced my way through. I was trying to be more than what I was. I was letting everyone else's opinion come into play, and then you get money and all these things that come in to weigh on you and change you. You can see who I was before that, and I think I'm a better version of who I was then now.
When you look at Paulo Costa and I look at your fighting style, you're somebody who I feel like gets better as the fight goes on because you're able to take the information that the opponent gives you, utilize that against them, and find their weaknesses. Paulo Costa is the kind of guy that won't give you that chance early on. It takes, you know, he will come at you with everything he has early. We saw that in the Vettori fight. So are you planning on having a more defensive approach against him early on in this fight so that you can get those reads without, I guess, getting a little bit reckless against the guy who wants you to get reckless?
Yeah, Paulo drives off emotion and intimidation, and that's his game. But guess what? Everyone's figured that shit out. You know, not everyone, but Israel figured it out. And if you question that man, if you question him as a man in the middle of that octagon, he's going to question himself. So I think it's key to be patient, but to be alert and be on the attack very early on, you know, and make him threaten him early on. Not over stepping my boundaries, like I said, like I've done in the past. You know, that's a weakness. A lot of it is a weakness, that intimidation, that force, that early start, you know. And so you gotta roll that. You gotta play that right. I know what I read a lot from how Izzy fought him. You know, Izzy met him in the middle and he threatened him and he let him know that, you know, if you overstep this line, you're gonna get hurt. And I'm not scared of you. And I think that's the recipe. He's got to know that if he stays at distance, he's going to get hurt. I'm a longer, lengthier. I got more strikes on the outside that he can't contend with. I got, but on the inside, of course, maybe that might favor him. But if he oversteps his boundaries and he slips and he falls or he gets too close to me, there's not a man in this world that will exist, you know, for any period of time underneath me. If I get on top of this guy, I'm a better wrestler. I'm a better jiu-jitsu, and I feel I'm a better striker too. Right? But there's a massive gap between me and him in wrestling and jiu-jitsu. So he doesn't want to make mistakes coming forward.
Yeah, I talked about this with someone earlier. I said, I don't think there's anybody in the history of the middleweight division that's had better top control than Luke Rockhold. Like, in terms of how much you're able to threaten an opponent from that position. Maybe even in the history of MMA, somebody who's been able to get on top and threaten in so many different ways, such a variety of ways. I don't know if we've seen it, better than you have.
I don't think they have. I don't think there's ever been a man that understands the MMA grappling better than me. Everyone loses sight of who I am because jiu-jitsu and submissions and shit. Submissions, when you chase submissions, it creates tension. creates tension, and which creates problems, and you lose that. You have to let go of position. You have to understand leverage and control, which increases your velocity of your punches and your strikes and their weakness. You know, when you're above a man, when you control a man, I anchor myself down. I don't wrestle with my hands. I wrestle with my hips. I surf guys. And there's no one that's been better than me. I honestly know that there's not a man in MMA that has better grappling credentials. I don't know, what are credentials, really? I'll beat the brakes off anybody. And I showed that everywhere I go, every year after year, I've been in with anybody, everybody knows.
Well, forget credentials. Just look at practical. I mean, in terms of practical usage of those skills, I just don't think that we've seen somebody who's been able to do it like you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it comes from my team, you know, me and Khabib, you know, and they know it's like, that's what we do, you know. I think you learn a lot from the best of the best, and iron sharpens iron world, and there's a reason why me and Khabib have been the best, because we pushed each other and the great heights. You know, I know I've helped Khabib a lot, help him release from his game, and you know, his control was so good, but then when like he really started to let go of his grips and wrestle with his hips more, that's when you saw Khabib start to ruin people, you know. And that's the key, and that's my philosophy is anchoring yourself and using wrestling with your hips and not your hands.
And final question, was there any sort of period within the last 3 years where you contemplated retirement? I'm guessing obviously not recently, but during that time where you've had that time away, was that ever a thought?
I mean, of course, it creeps in, it creeps out, but I was never really solid. I never solidified that I was going to retire. I hate when people do that. You know, it's a promotional tactic. I retire, you know, they come back, it's whatever. The fans like that, as highs and as lows, but you know, it's like I just want to be true to myself. And I knew that I'm a fighter deep down, and I just needed a break. 15 years of fighting, it burns you out, and you don't want to fighting the baddest human beings every day of your life. It's like it weighs on your consciousness. So the break was necessary, but coming back was even more necessary, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, Luke, it's always refreshing to speak with you. Best of luck this Saturday in the co-main event yourself, Paulo Costa. It's UFC 278. Always appreciate your time. He's in the co-main event of UFC 278. He is Paulo Costa, the Eraser, Bohachinha. Always appreciate your time, sir. This fight week, you've come in really good shape. It looks like making 185 pounds won't be a problem this time around. How did you rededicate yourself to getting back down to middleweight?
Hello, man. It's a such pleasure to be here and talk for the fans. The fans are so important to me. Is the biggest things on all this business is the fans. You know, I do everything that I do for bring the best show for the fans, man. This is my goals, my primary goals is bring a great show. My shape is very well. It's the best that I brought until here. I dedicate a lot, you know, a lot diet and a lot good exercise. I would say I create a kind of personal exercise and personal diet to myself. I think this is the best way to achieve my goals. Because everybody is single different, and when you find something that you need exactly what you need, I think the thing is going better than before, and that's what I think happened with me this time.
I watched your YouTube channel, and you fly all the way from Brazil. There's a stopover on the way, and you're drinking like 10 liters of water on that trip.
Yes.
How do you go on a plane flight for 10 liters of water? How many times do you have to go to the bathroom on a flight?
Oh, like 10 times. Yeah, the commissary of the flight, I think she actually asked me, are you okay? I pee a lot on the flight. But it's part of the process, you know. You hydrate your body before cut. So I think this is necessary to make the process easier.
Last time around, I spoke to you during fight week, and you seem to have a real philosophical issue with cutting to 185 pounds for that particular fight against Vettori. Why was that, and was it just getting bad advice from somewhere, or was that just how you felt then? Walk me through what your thought process was that week and why it's so different this time around.
Yeah, that time was completely different than now, okay? It's a very good question because giving me an opportunity to clarify. On that time, 1 month before the fight, I had an injury on my left biceps, so I could not train anymore. You know, just run and do some bike. But to make this process, to make 185, I need to train with the whole body. That's why I came so heavy. You understand what I mean? I came heavy even to light heavyweight. So it was impossible to make 185, you know, because I got here heavy, very heavy. So now it's different because the camp goes very well, no injuries since the last fight. You know, the most recent fight, not last fight, the most recent fight against Marvin Vettori. So since there, I had no injuries. You know, the boy is fresh, ready, quickly, fast, sharp. So with no injuries, you know, no extra problems, I have no excuse to not make weight. The weight goes very, very, going out very fast. And the things worked very well.
So why not just pull out of that last fight? If you knew you were compromised, you had an injured bicep, you weren't going to be the best Paulo Costa, what made you stay in that fight? I know it's a main event, you don't want to disappoint the promotion, but at the same time, you also want to win and get that win bonus.
Yes, that's a good question. I did this question for myself a couple times, but on that time, When I injured my left arm, my biceps, I talked with my team and we agreed to keep this fight on, you know, using more kicks than boxing. Because we are very confident on my skills and that I could beat Marvin Vettori even with an injury on my left arm. And the fight was good if you look for the conditions that I was. You know, I think I could beat him. I believe I beat him. I was better than him on that fight. I feel the referee, what his name? Herzog, Rob Evan, he took 1 point on the very first incidental. I never saw this before. Referee took 1 point on the very first accidentally I poke, and he took 1 point. This changed the whole fight, but this is past. The point of this question is me and my team really believe I could beat him even with my bicep injury.
Well, you were hitting him with eraser bombs. You were trying to get him out of there. But that guy's got a good chin. I don't know if we've seen a chin as good as Vittori's in a long time.
Yes, yes. Please, that's it. I kick a lot. If you watch the fight, I kick more than use the box. I consider me a very good boxer on MMA. For MMA, for MMA fighters, I have a good boxing. But I didn't use it a lot because, you know, I was injured, so I need to kick more than usual. But he don't fall. I need to recognize he has a good chin.
Do you think that Luke Rockhold is going to be able to take shots like that if you were able to connect with him on those same shots that you did against Vettori? Do you think he's able to withstand that given his recent track record?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. Let's see. The people say he has not good chin. Let's see. I will put his chin up on a very good test.
Now, one thing about Luke is he seems to get better as fights go on. Once he starts to figure out the rhythm, that's where he's really at his most dangerous. Early on is where you can kind of capitalize. Is that what your plan is here? Is to kind of, really bring the war to him early?
Yes. This is my style. Chase the opponent. Since the beginning of the fight, I will pressure him all time.
Now, I don't know if you're able to discuss this because it's a legal matter, but back in May, there was a situation that took place in Belo Horizonte, Brazil, about something about a COVID-19 vaccination card. What ended up happening? Was it a misunderstanding? And what was the end result?
There was a very mess. I did nothing. I did nothing. I didn't hit nobody. This is just a fake accusation, fake allegation. Was not true. And but that shit's happened. But I am not guilty.
So what ended up being the situation? Was it just something that got blown out of proportion?
Sorry, say again, please.
Was it just something they make something big out of something small? Is that what you believe happened?
No, I'm a popular figure in Brazil and on the world. And when the people saw this news, of course, this is will like a bomb. This will blow up. So it's normal. It's normal. But I didn't hit nobody because if I hit her, he has nothing on her mouth. And the officers on the police station, they saw that and they, okay, of course you did nothing and you take a picture of her because he has nothing and it's impossible it's possible that her got a hit for you, a fight, a well-born, it is impossible. It's crazy things, right? Crazy, so crazy. But yes, happened. I could not do nothing different. I did nothing.
And final question for you. Alec Pereira, your countryman, he's getting the next shot at Israel Adesanya. You've been in there with Israel. I'm sure you're very familiar with Alex. I think Alex is the best kickboxer right now on the planet. But of course, this is MMA. What do you think happens in that fight in November?
I don't use to analyze. I make analyzing of other fights. I put 100% of my attention, my energy, my emotional on my fights. But a lot of people ask me about this, and I could say for you right now, the both guys are striking kickboxer. I think would be a kickboxing fight.
So you don't think that Israel tries to take him down or anything along those lines? You think it's all stand up for 5 rounds or as long as it lasts?
No, I think either no one of both guys has skills enough to put Dao to make wrestler or jiu-jitsu. I think both either has that skills necessary to put each other down.
Well, Paulo, it's nice to see you back in the cage this weekend. You welcome back Luke Rockhold in the co-main event of UFC 278. Always appreciate your time, your honesty, and look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you. Let's see you soon. Bye.
I'm pleased to be joined by Magomed Umalatov, who last week unfortunately was unable to compete at the PFL event due to visa issues. He's joined by Saeed Saparov, his translator. I appreciate your time. Obviously, this is a tough situation for you. Being unable to compete. So, my big question here is, why did the PFL not make accommodations for fighters like yourself and Denis Goltsov to have your bouts take place in the United States so that you could continue in the tournament?
So he said he didn't know about the tournament. The semifinals will be in Great Britain, especially in the Wales in Cardiff. So only after he won the previous fight, and he know that he moving to the playoffs. So he just knew that the fights will be placed in Great Britain. So before, he didn't know about it. And when they informed us that the tournament will place in Great Britain, we, the managers and I, trying to told the to the league, to the heads of the league, that this is the very difficult to get the visa to the United Kingdom, you know, Great Britain. And the thing is, we have a lot of the friends, you know, who is the fighting in the UFC and Bellator, and they have the same problem there, and that's why the leagues like Bellator and UFC move them for another events, you know what I mean? So that's why we told them that there might be difficulties with the visa issue. So and then yeah, is it like that, you know?
And as a fighter, when you see that they've moved tournaments to London, for example, so that Brendan Loughnane can perform in front of his home crowd. You've seen Anthony Pettis have his fights moved to different dates to accommodate his health situation. Does it trouble you that athletes such as yourself, and again, like Denis Goltsov, I don't want to leave him out because he had the same situation, that you are unable to compete in the tournament when they've made accommodations for other fighters?
Yes, the thing is, we saw many times that if they want to move, they want to change the schedule, they do this, the samples with the Anthony Pettis or with another fighters. But I see that they have some maybe politics against me, against Russian fighters, maybe, I don't know. But the thing is, if they wanted to move, because we asked for change the schedule for the New York event, especially the Magomedov fight. The managers asked for the change for the New York event, but they said no, we'll figure out there. But we told them that the visa, to get a visa to Great Britain is very difficult. Maybe 90% they didn't give us, you know. And the next, I see that they have maybe some plans for the Ray Cooper, because I know that he's a former champion and he's the favorite fighter for them, you know, and maybe they thought that he will be replace us, except me and Magomed Kerimov. But you see that the Ray Cooper was injured and the plan didn't work. And now another guy in the finals who just fought once there and didn't achieve any points, you know what I mean?
Well, you were a 4-1 favorite against Rory McDonald. We saw that he lost over the course of the weekend. You would have been heavily favored against Sadibouzi, in my opinion, had that been the final match. Do you feel like you're missing out on $1 million in this situation? You moved your family to the U.S. so that you would be eligible to compete in the United States, and they ended up doing this tournament in the United Kingdom. Do you feel like the result of what's happened here is costing you $1 million?
So, absolutely, there is a goal for every fighter is to get money, because, you know, to be a fighter is very difficult. About the, you know, I leave my family in my hometown. I more than half here. I'm here in the United States alone, and you know, the $1 million is the number one goal for me at the in the case of PFL Grand Prix. Absolutely, that's why I'm joined this organization and signed the contract. And totally, I know that I was there in Grand Prix for the reason. The reason is $1 million, and I know that I can get this million, you know, and I show with my fights there. And the thing is, we see that the Grand Prix and how the system works is very difficult, you know, because half year we're staying without fights, and then half years only fights, and it's really difficult to stay always ready to the fights. Absolutely, this situation makes me disappointed, because, you know, I try to forget it because I'm a fighter. I know that we always do, we know that the fights is hard. But, you know, every time the people message me, a lot of fans, you know, and not only just the fans from my hometown, but all now in America, I have fans, you know, even from Middle East. They support me and they message me every day. Even today, I have a lot of messages in my direct, and they asked me why I didn't fight. I don't fight in the finals, you know, because for them, for the fans, they don't understand this Grand Prix system, you know, with the points. For the fans, they see that the good fighter win every fight, but then he's not in the finals, you know, there's looks like a little bit like, you know. So, and another reason is a face against the Rory McDonald is absolutely honor for me and a huge respect for this guy because he's a legendary fighter, you know. But they take this chance for me, you know, and this is not only about the fight with him, but this is about my next promotion because I believe that if I will fight with the Rory, you know, for my career, it might be a big jump, you know.
Now, the issue that's causing a lot of these Russian athletes to be unable to get visas is the obviously what's going on in Ukraine with Russia. Do you feel like Russian athletes are being negatively impacted by this and that it's unfair to Russian athletes that they have to, you know, that they're unable to compete as a result of what's going on from a political standpoint?
Just in this case, I feel that there is not like a pressure, but, you know, it's like before I didn't feel something like negative here in the United States because I'm training here. Now is almost 1 year I'm here, you know, training, doing the fights, you know, I feel comfortable, you know, but since this situation happened, it looks like familiar to the situation between this international troubles like with the Russia-Ukraine conflict or whatever, but I feel that there is not like a good act of manner, you know. If they want to support their fighters, it doesn't matter like where from, you know, because I fought for them and I showed the good fights, like, you know, but in the end of the days, they did like didn't support me as a fighter. This is absolutely disappointing, yeah.
All right, well, I appreciate your honesty with all of these questions. Final question for you. Do you expect to be back with the PFL next year, given what's taken place this season?
That's the thing. I never ask for the opponents, never ask for the something, you know. I like to go to the fights. I like to show the spectacular fights, as you know. But since this situation happened, the PFL didn't contact with me or with my managers and didn't clear the air about this situation because absolutely, I want to hear something from them, you know, and I don't want to act in something like bad or something angry about it. But this is about respect only, you know. And I did everything in the part, my part of contract. I did everything. So, but I want to see something from them. I wait for the like the dialogue. I want to dialogue with them. And absolutely, if there is something, show to me that they want to me still in the PFL, stay in the PFL. Of course, I'm ready for the fights always. There is nothing about I want to quit or something. But, you know, I want to see some respect for myself too.
All right, Magomed, спасибо, брат. Appreciate you. Thank you, Saeed. Thank you both for your time. Undefeated fighter. Sorry, go ahead.
I think I did good. You know, like, everything is correct, you know.
Well, we do what we can with the translation. I really appreciate your time. Thank you both. And I look forward to seeing you. Undefeated fighter, you're putting on a show whenever you're in there. And we love watching you do your thing. Look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Yeah, take care.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Just 2 years ago, Stevie Ray was retired from MMA. Now, 2 years later, he's looking to become a millionaire. He's in the finals of the PFL Lightweight Championship against a former training partner, Olivier Aubin-Mercier. So first off, tell me about how you were able to recover from the injury that had forced you to retire from MMA in the first place.
So I kind of emotionally retired after the whole departure with the UFC. So it wasn't solely just due to the injury, but yeah, I did have an injury as well. Mostly some obviously rehab stuff with the legs and Bikram yoga. I feel like that's been one of the biggest ones.
So that's like hot yoga, right? Is that Bikram yoga?
Yeah. So it's like a 90-minute session. I try and do that at least once a week. Yeah, try and get as much kind of sessions in as I can, but a minimum of one a week. and it's really helped my range of motion and mobility and just the overall health of my entire body, to be honest.
Yeah, so what are the healing qualities of Bikram yoga? Because I'm familiar with it, but I'm not certain how it can help recover from an injury. That part I don't know.
Yeah, so it's got a lot of like healing properties, and yeah, just a mix. I think of the heat, you're able to get in a better range of motion. You're also getting a workout as well, because it's quite an actual tough workout. And yeah, it's one of my favorite sessions of the week. Always feel amazing after it.
So you had an interesting road in this tournament. You faced Anthony Pettis, you beat him by submission, and then, I don't know if it was considered a KO or a submission, but either way, you tweaked his body to a way in which he was unable to continue the fight. And then you had to have a rematch with him. So what's the mentality like going into a rematch against somebody who you've just beaten?
To be honest, I had done it before. I fought before the UFC and PFL. I fought in Cage Warriors. And I fought Kurt Warburton 3 times. The first time he beat me, then I beat him, and then I beat him again. So I'm undefeated in rematches. And yeah, it was a little bit weird, especially with it being, you know, such a short time, 6 weeks. But I feel like I was, you know, more in my favor because he was... I believe he was slightly injured after that, you know, the first fight when I submitted him. And yeah, I came out of the fight completely healthy. So yeah, I was just glad to, you know, I submitted him the first time and then beat him by decision the second time. So it really cemented my place that it wasn't a fluke or lucky or whatever.
So when you're going into that fight though, mentally, is your mindset, I just beat this guy, I can beat him again, I know I can beat him again because I just did it, or let's forget about the first fight, let's approach this like it's a completely different fight? Or maybe it's a mix of the two, but how mentally do you approach something like that, knowing that you've just beaten someone and now 6 weeks later you have to face them again?
Yeah, so a little bit of both. I mean, that is on my mind where I'm like, I've beat this guy 6 weeks ago, I know I could beat him again. But even before the first fight, I was confident, I knew I could beat him. I believed in, you know, my skill set, and just, I knew how hard I trained. Like, I believe confidence comes from your work ethic, and I trained my butt off for this whole year, really. I mean, the first fight, I lost to Alexander Martinez. I made a lot of mistakes in that fight, and I had ring rust as well. I hadn't fought in 2.5 years. So now that I got that out of the way, when I fought Pettis, I felt a lot more comfortable, you know, just being in the cage again and being more aware of everything that... Because you seem to forget, when I was in the cage against Martinez, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember what this feels like. But yeah, just over the moon to... I've beaten him twice now, and now I'm in the final.
Well, the PFL is kind of a strange beast because you look at Pettis in that first fight against you. In his head, he's got to know he's in the playoffs. He was going to get an automatic berth into the playoffs regardless of the outcome of your fight with him. So he's a much more dangerous opponent the second time around because the stakes are so much higher for him. Did you have to think about it that way as well?
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit weird for him, but at the end of the day, like, regardless of the situation of the fight, when you're fighting someone, you're trying to win. You're not going to be like, you know, I'll let the guy win so I can, and I'll let him win quick so I'm not injured or anything like that. You're trying to win. I don't believe it would change, you know, much. And I proved that in the second fight that, you know, it didn't matter that he was guaranteed through, because the second fight, you know, he needed to win, and I still managed to get the win. But I think that was just, you know, things to make him feel better and maybe reassure himself, you know, just trying to stay confident for the second fight.
Yeah, but either way, the stakes are high for you in both those fights too, right? I mean, you need to win in the first fight. You need to win in the second fight if you want to continue to win $1 million. So it's almost irrelevant what the stakes are for him at that kind of situation.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the stakes are so high anyway. And, you know, even if it wasn't in the $1 million tournament, like, I feel like the stakes are always high when you're in a fight. Like, even if there's no any money on the line, you know, it's like your reputation, your masculinity. Like, nobody wants to lose a fight. It's horrible losing a fight. And yeah, and I had to fight Anthony Pettis twice, like, former world champion. And, you know, I'm a fan of Anthony Pettis as well, so that was a little bit difficult. You know, when I seen him, I remember thinking, like, that's Anthony Pettis. You know, like, a wee bit starstruck and, you know, a bit of a fanboy. But I had to keep my mind right and, you know, remember, like, stay away from that. You've got to fight him. You've got to try and beat him.
And now you're on to Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who's a beast, one of the best Canadian fighters in the world right now. And you know this because you've trained with him. You trained at TriStar for some time. Tell me about those experiences training at TriStar and how familiar you are with Olivier.
Yeah, I mean, we're a little bit familiar with each other because we've trained together. We've never done too much stuff together. Like, we've sparred a little bit. We've rolled together. I feel like we're quite similar. We're both good grapplers. We're both strong. We're both southpaws. We've both got power in our hands, especially our left hand. I mean, we both can knock people out and drop people with our left hand. He dropped Martinez twice in that fight. You know, I dropped Martinez in the fight. And yeah, like, you know, just like he's got his strengths, he's got his weaknesses, the same with myself. And I think it'll come down to, you know, who trains the hardest, who wants it more, and just kind of what happens on the night.
How long were you at TriStar for? And what was that experience like for you?
So I went to TriStar, I think I've been there maybe 3 or 4 times. The first time I was there for 3 weeks. Second time I was there for 4 weeks, and then I think I'd done 6 or 7 weeks. I'd done my whole fight camp the last time I was there before I fought fought Jason Ayari in Moncton. And yeah, like, Faraz was in my corner along with my head MMA coach James Dillon. They both cornered me in Moncton, Canada. Yeah, like, they were kind of part of my training and stuff. And yeah, I like to get away from family for the training. And, you know, I was a big fan of GSP. That's why I kind of first started going there.
I was just in Moncton 2 weeks ago. I was supposed to be at the event that you fought on, but my daughter was born 6 weeks early. So I was unable to go to that Moncton event, but I was finally able to get to that city just 2 weeks ago. It's a nice city.
Oh, nice. Congratulations on your daughter as well.
Well, thank you. I mean, that was when you fought in Moncton. So it's been some time. She started in kindergarten in September. So.
Sorry. Oh, right. I get you.
And you have a daughter as well, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah. So we're here now. I'm in the hospital just now. Just a routine appointment. One of my daughters has got epilepsy, so she's just getting... It's like a routine appointment. She's not had any checkups in a couple of years, so she's to get a 24-hour EEG. So we're staying over in the hospital today. But yeah, I've got 4 kids. I've got one son and 3 daughters.
Wow. I mean, you're brave for stepping into the octagon, but for having 4 kids, I mean, that's a new level of bravery. I've got 3, and that's more than enough for me.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, my job is tough. Being a fighter is one of the toughest jobs out there, but I would probably happily admit that the one tougher job is probably looking after kids full time. So take my hat off to my wife. You know, I've watched all 4 kids a few different times, and yeah, it's one of the hardest jobs ever. I don't know how she manages to do it. She does a pretty good job as well.
Yeah, my kids are out with my wife at the zoo right now. I don't know how she does it on her own, but, you know, she manages to figure it out. It's not easy having 3 kids running around all the time. For you, 4 kids, so I can understand where you're coming from. Now, $1 million on the line in your next fight. What would $1 million mean to you and your family if you're able to get the win?
Oh, it would just just me and everything. I mean, such life changing. It just makes things so much easier. Just like, you know, having stress with money can obviously affect your life, your relationship and stuff. So it just totally would be the opposite, you know, just... and yeah, just like if you can ever pay off your house early rather than, you know, when you're older, just such a relief. I mean, don't get me wrong, like money is cool. Like the most important thing is just the family. So if I didn't end up winning, I've still got my family, and that those are the most, like, money can't buy that, but yeah, it would definitely be pretty good to win it.
And you're just, I believe, 32 years old. So how much longer do you want to continue fighting for? And do you expect to be in the PFL tournament next year regardless?
Well, when, you know, before when I had these knee injuries, I believed I was only had maybe a little while left. Because even before, you know, I semi-retired, you know, I had knee issues for years. And, like, I fought Jason Ayari with bad knees, Michael Johnson. You know, the list goes on, Leonardo Santos and all of them. I had to totally adapt my training, you know, go swimming a lot instead of either strength conditioning or swimming. And yeah, like I said, the Bikram yoga is just completely just like healed my knees. Now I actually feel like I'm in my prime. I've went from being a kind of half injured fighter for a few years to just rejuvenated and a bit in my prime. So I would like to, to be honest, I don't know. I know I've definitely got a good few more years. I'm 32. I'm not too old. And I'm back to full healthy. Like, I fought 3 times in 4 months. And now all of the fights pretty much untouched in regards to injuries. And I believe that because I have the ability in all my joints, from the yoga and just being smart, you know, stretching after training and stuff, and being more aware of, like, health on the body, that's why. Whereas in the past, you know, I've had a lot of fights where I've been, like, pretty injured for a while after the fights.
Well, Steve, I've got a lot of hopes for you. I hope we get to see you fight for another couple of years. I hope that everything goes well for your daughter, for her diagnostics in the hospital. I hope you win $1 million. So I appreciate all of your time. Thank you for this, and look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Thank you, man. Me too. I hope I win too. Win it this year, win it next year. And yeah, sky's the limit.
And as I mentioned off the top, I wanted to play an excerpt of an interview that I did with Rory McDonald several years ago. Back in 2019, he was in studio with me at TSN. We talked about the struggles that he was having at the time with rationalizing his newfound faith with being a cage fighter. And I thought it was a very interesting interview with Rory. You know, Rory sometimes can be very, very reserved, but I really appreciated in this instance how forthright he was with how he was feeling at that time. So here's that clip with Rory McDonald in studio back from 2019.
I find there are two camps of fighters. There are people that are kind of obsessed with watching mixed martial arts all the time. They watch every event and they're trying to learn as much as they can from those things. And there are folks like yourself that don't watch a ton of fighting. So what's your rationale for not watching a ton of fighting?
I used to when I was a kid. But I've been fighting pro for 14 years now. And it's just not my biggest interest anymore. So I spend my time doing other things that I enjoy, but you know, I still catch it. Obviously, I'm in it. I watch a lot of the highlights and things like that. But I don't catch every fight event, that's for sure.
So on a Saturday night, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm spending time with my family. Usually not watching the fights.
And what are the other interests you, that you're talking about that keep you from?
Yeah, my other interests, I'm on YouTube all the time. I watch a lot of stuff on Christianity, different preachers I like, and just kind of podcasts on that, building faith and different subjects on that, living the Christian life, reading the Bible, going to church, things like that. So that's my biggest interest, you know, and my number one thing in life. And then second, like my little hobbies, I like looking into like watches and like stuff like that, just nerdy stuff like that, I guess. And mostly spending time with my girls, my wife and my daughter.
Yeah, so the Christianity aspect, has that been prevalent in your entire fight career, or is that something that you've kind of found in recent years?
Yeah, definitely recent. I was raised Catholic, but never really had a relationship with Jesus until the last couple of years. And I was baptized, and and since I was baptized, even a little before, it's been a new road for me, where I'm truly following and improving every day and growing in my faith and growing in my walk with God and being a good man and the way God intended me to be, you know.
And what sparked that?
Well, it started from my wife-to-be. When we first met, she invited me to church, and I started going with her, hearing the preachers talk about it, and then slowly taking more and more of an interest over time, and then, you know, being more involved as time went on, and my faith growing, hearing it, hearing the Word of God being spoken, hearing the church services and things like that, reading the Bible, and yeah, so that's when, you know, my faith grew, and I trusted in God, and I trusted as Jesus as my Lord and Savior, and yeah.
And is there an internal struggle at all, or a philosophical struggle between what you do for a living and your faith?
At times I've been convicted about it. Recently, I've had some struggle with it, you know, but I feel now that I'm in the position, this door is open from God for me to be in this industry for a reason. There is no other open door right now on the horizon, at the moment of where I feel that God wants me to be. So I feel that I am positioned in this sport and in this spot in my life for a reason. And I think it's my responsibility to carry myself as a man of God in everything I do. So if it's, you know, to witness to people and in this industry and the people I train with or something like that, you know, I have to be that servant of God in everything I do. So I feel like this is the door that's open for me right now, and whatever door comes next, you know, I feel like that'll be from God to lead me in that next journey, you know, because obviously fighting isn't forever.
Now, when you're fighting, I mean, it is a competition, it's a sport, it's something you've trained your whole life for,
yeah.
But at its crux, it's to impose your will on another human being,
yeah.
To hurt another human being,
yeah.
And to make another human being feel pain and loss when they lose.
Yeah.
How do you come to grips with that as a Christian?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. That's the conviction I felt, is what I'm doing make God happy, you know? So that's something that I wrestle with, but it is the door that's open for me right now. And, I have to do my kindness to, even though it's not something that's Christ-like, you know, the actual sport, I think everything around it I need to be to represent myself as and be more like Christ in everything else that I do, you know. But the competition is, it's brutal, you know. It's a contact sport where you're delivering damage and taking damage and things like that. But I think God can use people in every facet of life to speak to, you know, whoever it is that needs to be called.
Now, I'm not of the Christian faith. I'm Jewish. But I think that religion at its core has a general principle where you're trying to make people feel good about themselves and help people. And one of the things that I always think about when it comes to mixed martial arts or pro wrestling or sports or any of these things is that every Saturday night or Friday night or whenever the event is, you're helping people that are suffering feel an escape. Like if there's somebody in the hospital that, you know, has terminal cancer, something along those lines, and they get something out of what you're doing,
right,
that's going to bring joy to them, even though, like I mentioned, the crux of the sport is to hurt somebody. Do you think of it in that way as well?
I don't know. Like, the reason why I started this wasn't to, for any other reason, but to satisfy myself, my own interest in martial arts, and then that release from whatever I had inside to that outlet, that self-expression. So now I've gotten to a point in my career where, you know, I'm pretty established, you know, I've won the world title now, and I'm in these bigger fights, and then recently became Christian, so I'm wrestling with all that, you know, but yeah, it's definitely an interesting place to be in. It's in that I'm it's always on my mind.
It's developing.
Yeah, it's a developing story for sure.
You are now a father, as you mentioned, fatherhood. What has that taught you as a human being?
It's been awesome. I always loved kids, and I always wanted to be a father, so it's a dream come true. You know, I definitely didn't expect it to happen when it happened, but it changed my life for the better and set me on this journey that I'm on now. You know, meeting my wife and where I was at that point in my life, it was on a totally different course, and I feel like God put me on this like crash course, like God's grace, you know, really saved me from my own plan and my own wherever I was trying to take my life. You know, I feel like I was on, looking back, hindsight 2020, I was on a crash course of destroying my life, you know. So God's grace came and you know, set me on a great path. I'm a father of a beautiful daughter. I'm married now to my beautiful wife, and she's pregnant with our son on the way in August.
That's amazing.
So life is good, man. I'm super happy.
So when you say you were on a crash course to destruction.
Yeah, destroying everything I had built, you know. So
What can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it was just living a destructive lifestyle, and also I had a destructive mindset. Any relationship I was in, like with people, any kind of friendship or any like interaction I would have with people, I would just release all the bad stuff that I had bottled up in me on them. So I took everything out on people, and also just did whatever pleased, you know, me in the moment, and really just had no care for anything but pleasing myself.
So having a daughter is really what that's where the fork in the road was, essentially.
Somewhat. For something, I would say my relationship with God was the biggest fork, to be honest. But having a daughter played a big role in it, too, because of the responsibility at hand. When my daughter was born, I was believing in Jesus. I wasn't baptized or anything like that yet, but I was going to church and making positive steps in my life. But I knew while my wife-to-be at the time was pregnant that I had a responsibility coming up and life was about to change. So I was making positive steps, but I didn't really totally get off that path I was on until, you know, I really dedicated my life to Christ.
And how old's your daughter now?
She's 2.5, turning 3 in July, so a little over 2.5. But
it's a pretty crazy roller coaster. I've got 3 of my own, so it's very it can be, you know, trying at times, but it's always it's the most fulfilling thing you can do is have a child, and it brings more fulfillment to your life than I'm sure you could have ever imagined until you've experienced it.
Absolutely. Like I said, I always wanted to be a father, and I wasn't ready in my mind when it came about, but man, I'm so happy. Like, I couldn't imagine with life now without her. She's amazing.
So what's your big motivator going forward in terms of remaining the welterweight champion and any other big things that you're looking to do from a career perspective?
Yeah, well, I enjoy the competition. I enjoy expressing that passion inside of me when I'm shaping up against a guy, even in sparring. It's fun to like figure out that puzzle and to do that cool move that you learned and to apply it in the way that you feel inside is the way to be done. So I still feel like that motivates me when I'm having fun doing like in competition, when there's a guy trying to attack me, but I solve it with that piece that I was taught, that I learned, and I'm able to put it out there in the way that I feel it should be done. I find that really interesting and fun.
All right, that'll do it for this week's episode of the TSN MMA Show. A big thank you to all of our guests, and a big thank you to you, the listener, for joining us to, of course, listen to all of the biggest happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Always a pleasure each and every week to have you here with me. And if you could take a moment, I have a couple favors to ask you. Favor number one, go to worldmmaawards.com and you can vote for the Journalist of the Year. And it would be an honor if you decided to vote for me. The other candidates in the field are also very worthy candidates. You've got Ariel Helwani, Mike Bond, John Morgan, Sean Al-Shadi. Any of them would be great people to vote for. But if you enjoy this podcast and you enjoy the work that I do, please, by all means, do cast your ballot for yours truly. And while you're at it, take another couple moments. I know this is a lot to ask. Rate and review the show. Give us a 5-star rating or 4-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe a nice little write-up. All that stuff is very much appreciated. And even if you don't do that, you're still appreciated and loved. So thank you for tuning in this week. And we'll be back next week. No events in the UFC next week. So I'm going to be taking a little bit of time away, but I might be doing a recap show with Bazooka Joe. So hopefully that's the case, and we'll be back next week with that. So thanks for tuning in, and we will see you then.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.